Hi, and welcome to Inference, an AI business podcast by Silo AI. I'm Ville Hulkko, co-founder of Silo, the largest private AI lab in the Nordics that focuses on building human-centric AI for businesses. With the Inference podcast, we introduce a number of topics and people of the global AI scene that every business decision maker should know. With me today is Sabrina Maniscalco. Sabrina is a professor of quantum information computing and logic at the University of Helsinki, as well as an adjunct professor at Aalto University. Sabrina is also the co-founder and CEO of Algorithmic, a quantum computing algorithm development startup focusing on solving real-world impact challenges through quantum computing. Sabrina, it's a privilege to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here, and I'm very happy to chat about quantum computing and machine learning and the intersection between the two, because it's really a fascinating topic.
Lovely. And Sabrina, I kind of gave a short introduction to you in the beginning, but I think it would be perfect if you could actually introduce yourself in a bit more detail. So who are you?
Yes, so I'm Sabrina Maniscalco, Sicilian and Italian as well, of course, but I always say I'm Sicilian because I really feel I belong to my island. And I moved to Finland, it was in 2005, so now many, many years ago, when I started my postdoc in the University of Turku. And since then, I've been, with the exception of 3 years in which I, when I got my first professorship in Edinburgh, I've been living happily in Finland, although my Finnish is still rather poor, I have to confess. My research field is quantum technologies. I'm a theorist, so despite I collaborate with experimentalists, generally I don't go into the lab, but I collaborate generally with people who do experiments. I like it very much because theoretical physics in quantum, specifically quantum technologies, are nowadays really reaching a situation in which a lot of applications are possible also in industry. So not just experimental physics, but also real applications that promise really to be groundbreaking and to change a number of technologies. What else? I like very much sauna, and I love road trips and being in the nature. So this is additional information about who I am, perhaps as important as me being a professor of quantum information and computing.
Yeah, those are traits that are very well fit for a Nordic audience, yes. Put it that way, as we discuss about the topic. And Sabrina, getting us into the topic of quantum computing itself, it's a term known to pretty much all who follow the trends of technology, but I'd argue that fewer are aware about the current state of quantum computing applicability today. So can you talk about how quantum computing is relevant and how is it being utilized today?
Yes, so quantum computing has become more and more relevant for a number of applications of everyday use and for our society. About 20 years ago, when I started working in this field, it was just a theoretical exercise, if you want. It was quantum physics has always been fascinating and bizarre, and the behavior of the fundamental constituents of our universe, molecules and atoms, was just very counterintuitive, so to say. But nobody thought that the specific properties of, like quantum correlations and quantum superpositions, that is the ability, if you want, of particles of being here and there into different opposite states at the same time. Nobody thought that this could be really leading to any change in our technologies or any near-term application. This changed about 20 years ago, and actually we saw that, I think it was yesterday, or I don't remember if yesterday or 2 days ago, there was the announcement of the Nobel Prize in Physics to Alana Speck, Anton Zeilinger, and Clauser for quantum, specifically for fundamentals of quantum physics that led to the beginning of quantum information theory. So therefore, quantum computers nowadays exist. They exist in a small form, if we want. They exist in a manner that is still far from the fault-tolerant, so error-corrected computers that we work with, like our my laptop or my computer. So they are in their infancy, but they are accessible. It is possible to run programs or software or algorithms on quantum devices on the cloud, and they are evolving. So the hardware is evolving very, very rapidly, hand in hand with the software and with the algorithms. So while right now there is no single practical application that can be performed on a quantum computer in a manner which is superior to any classical programs, there are many proof of principle experiments, and there is a clear roadmap and a clear scaling. So there are results, and there are theoretical results and experimental results that show that soon we will reach a level, and with soon I can elaborate. It can be 5 years or it can be 15 years, depending on applications. We will reach levels in which we will have this superiority of the quantum machines with respect to any classical device.
And talking about the proof itself and the most likely aspects where quantum computing would be applied in practical scenarios, the first, what do you actually see being the first areas of application of quantum computing?
Personally, I believe that the most, so the first areas of application will be in simulations of quantum systems. So what does it mean, simulating or emulating other quantum systems? It basically means the fact that to fully, let's make an example, a concrete example that could be a material or a molecule. To fully describe quantum mechanical systems like materials or molecules using classical computers is very difficult, and in fact up to a certain extent impossible. So if the complexity of the molecules, let's say the size of the molecules, increases, we reach quickly levels where we don't even have enough memory in our computers to store the full description, if you want, of the molecule. And this is a very fundamental limit. So this is something which it's not, if you want, incremental. We do know that it is impossible to do it, impossible to store the information of the full information about the description of a molecule on a classical computer. However, quantum computers, they are possessing the same properties as other quantum systems like molecules, and therefore they can use the properties that are characteristic of this quantum system to emulate their behavior. So we use quantum computers to emulate the behavior of other quantum systems like molecules, and this allows us to predict properties that are then useful for quantum chemistry, and in turn to, for example, simulate the binding of the molecules to protein pockets, which is a problem very important to design drugs that are successful. So you see that the line is here really, in a way, learning from nature how to simulate nature in a controllable manner. There are certain systems which exist in nature that are quantum mechanical, but that we cannot control directly because we cannot access, because they are in the middle of, you know, maybe there are some molecules that are part of cells in our body. There can be a number of reasons why we cannot access them directly, but that we can simulate controllably their behavior on quantum machines.
And it's really interesting to hear, because as quantum computing is a bit of a hype term, it's been used and referred to as a lot in the media. It's one of the hot topics there. But at the same time, the way that I hear you refer to it is that the practical application of quantum computing is still kind of in a fledgling state, if you will. And it's not dissimilar to how the first like practical applications of AI were in like back in 2016, back in 2017. You know, when the hype was there, the promise that AI will eat the world was there. But strangely, it was nowhere in sight when it came to practical matters. So like reflecting back to that, like what would you say is kind of the one key takeaway we or the people should understand about quantum computing and its role as a toolkit of technology?
Yeah, I would like to say not one, but three, if I can take away. So the very first one is that There is a difference between two modalities of quantum computation. The first one is the so-called near term, and the other one is the error-corrected one. So quantum computers is one word that encompasses many types of hardware, many types of devices. It's not just one device, can be many things. But people very often use just one word, that is quantum computer, to mean many things. And that's why this often creates confusion. And also the hype certainly doesn't help, because you tend to associate properties and characteristic of a type of device, that is, for example, the error-corrected, fault-tolerant, or universal quantum computer, to a device which is the one that exists now, that is very different. For example, its specific purpose, it is used for only for simulations and so on and so forth. So this mixing, it's something that is, I find, very potentially dangerous, because it creates confusion, it creates false expectations, and it also creates really hype, which is not useful, really, to the community at large. But what is certain is that it is clear already now with the imperfect devices that we have, that we are able to manipulate them to create those quantum properties like entanglement that in turn enable to perform operations that are not possible classically in any manner. So this we know for sure, and we know that we will get little by little to a point in which the perfection of the device will enable modalities of computations that allow error correction and therefore allow to really scale up without the limitations that we are observing now. So this is one takeaway. We should distinguish between the so-called error-corrected, fault-tolerant quantum device 15 years from now, maybe 20 years from now, from what we have now, which is really not perfect, but it is useful already now. The second takeaway is that in order to use the near-term devices now in a way that can lead to applications, for example, in chemistry, we have to be able to clean them from noise. This is precisely what my startup Algorithmic is doing. So we are obviously figuring out how to extract the useful information from the computer and how to clean it up to recover the original quantumness. In a way, it's very similar to, you know, when you have a pixelated image, an image which is, with imperfections, and you use machine learning to clean the image, you know, to make it perfect. In a very similar manner, you can extract the data from quantum computers which are imperfect, and you can cancel the noise.
Got it. And you referred to as machine learning as a parallel, so let's use that as a perfect segue to start discussing about the relationship between quantum computing and machine learning in itself. So previously in our discussions, you've referred to machine learning having two different kinds of relationships with quantum computing. So can you introduce what these two approaches are?
So quantum machine learning is one of the applications of quantum computers that is most promising. And generally, when we refer to quantum machine learning, we consider two different aspects. The first one is the application of, so to say, classical or conventional machine learning combined with quantum computers. And the other one is quantum computers as an enhancer of machine learning per se. So I will try to explain these two separately. So the first one is the situation in which when using near-term devices, we need to use in combination classical and quantum algorithms. This is just because they are so small and so imperfect. And in particular, this means that you extract from the quantum computer the data just by measuring or reading out. And then we want to use a procedure to optimize the data that we extracted in all possible manners. And this optimization include also machine learning techniques. So this is one part. And then there is the other part that is the fact that it is demonstrated theoretically that actually quantum computers can be enabling machine learning per se, so can be the core of machine learning algorithms that could empower them really from a computational perspective, to break frontiers which are not possible until now. So we call them classical quantum machine learning and quantum machine learning in a way. So classical quantum is the use of classical machine learning for quantum, and quantum is the use of quantum machines for machine learning.
Interesting. And could you give us a practical example about the former? So if we were to use quantum computing and then another classical computing instance that is running machine learning in itself to supplement rather the calculations that the quantum computing is putting out. So what would be a practical example of this kind of a use case?
Yes, I would say that the full quantum machine learning is actually the situation in which both the learning device and the system under studies are treated in a fully quantum mechanical way. And therefore, we know that the type of the classes of problems that can be treated in this manner with this fully quantum mechanical approach is, for example, learning or unknown quantum states or quantum processes or measures. In some sense, these are very typical quantum mechanical problems per se. But if we think in terms of instead more, let's say, things which are closer to what classical machine learning does, then perhaps the closest one would be the quantum neural networks that are quantum analogs. They are really generalization of classical neural nets, and are, in this case, they would be. So there are different implementations, for example, using photons or using some variational circuits. But in general, they are they would be allowing to, let's say, reach in terms of computational powers other limits with respect to what is possible without them. So if you want, the application is there is not a specific application for which you can say this is for this specific application this would be better. It's just having a boost to the classical machine learning, a boost that is provided by the superior capability or computational capability of the quantum computer. So very often the way in which I see quantum computers is that, you know, the quantum computers, they will never replace classical computers, but it's like having like an external booster that only for certain specific problems can perform better than the classical one. So I think that this is perhaps the best way of understanding it, and it is not my field, so I don't know a lot about quantum machine learning, but we do use classical machine learning for quantum algorithms that are hybrid in my company. So this is the part I know the most, least about really the fully quantum one.
Got it. And before, you mentioned the theoretical approach to quantum machine learning. So would you be able to comment on, like, what in your perspective is kind of the readiness level, if you will, of quantum machine learning in itself? Is it, to your knowledge, being applied today, or is it still a theoretical concept?
There are experiments on quantum machine learning with small devices. However, consider once again that the size of the quantum computers of today, and they are the biggest quantum computer has 127 quantum bits. That is, quantum bits are the analog of the classical bits. So 127 bits, you can imagine, is not a lot. 127 quantum bits can be a lot. In particular, it can be sufficient to simulate sufficiently complex molecules to be impossible to simulate classically. So therefore, the point is that in any case, with these experiments, you can only achieve, with the status of the computers now in the fully quantum machine learning framework, you can achieve a proof of principle, but you cannot achieve anything at the moment that can be, let's say, can perform better than classical or conventional machine learning. So the tipping points, if you want, in which quantum machine learning is used or is better than the classical software, the classical algorithms, has not yet reached. And I think personally that for fully exploiting quantum machine learning, really to its full extent, we will need to wait that fault-tolerant quantum computers are deployed. And fault-tolerant quantum computers are quantum computers that use logical qubits, meaning qubits that are corrected, so they are ideal. But this correction has a very, very heavy overhead. So it is estimated that you need about 1,000 physical qubits to implement one logical qubit. So 1,000 just for one. So you can imagine that if we need at least 60 qubits for performing tasks that are not simulable classically, that means this automatically gives 60,000, and we have maximum 127. So it's just to say we are far from, I mean, how far in terms of time is difficult to say, but I would say maybe 10, 15 years.
Got it. Sabrina, we're starting to reach the end of the episode, but as is customary in inference, we love to predict the future, be it through machine learning or quantum machine learning. And I'd love to get a prediction out of you. So, of course, technology will change the world and everything will be transformed within the next couple of years. But to maybe get a bit of a more realistic estimation on the development of quantum computing, what would be your prediction or foresight to the next 3 to 5 years? Like, if we go 3 to 5 years into the future, how will the field of quantum computing look like there? What will be the next milestones that the field will begin tackling?
Yes, this is a very nice question, and this is a very exciting question for us, because here at Algorithmic, we have discovered the missing ingredient, indeed, for achieving quantum advantage for chemistry simulations. So we have in our roadmap to achieve quantum advantage for chemistry already next year. So maybe it will not be next year, it will be in 1 year and a half, but it's going to be soon. And the moment, for me, this is really the moment in which the community will have, for something which is useful, demonstrated superiority with respect to any classical software. And following these, there will be the application to life sciences, and in particular to drug development and discovery, for which we plan to have already commercial applications within 3 years. So I believe that really the biggest milestone, so if you want the holy grail of the whole field, that then will unlock all the possibility and practical applications, is the demonstration for a useful and then practical, industrially relevant use case, the superiority of algorithms running on quantum computers with respect to the state of the art classical computer. So that's my prediction. And this is also where we are the most excited.
Lovely. Thank you so much for that, Sabrina. And for anyone listening, I do encourage you to first go to YouTube and look up one of the numerous lectures that Sabrina has given. I certainly have, and they're quite enlightening. And then I also strongly encourage you to go to Google up Algorithmic. So the last letter is a Q, not a C, Algorithmic. And see what the company is all about. And with that, Sabrina, thank you so much for coming on. This has been a really enlightening conversation. Thanks for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you. It was really nice to chat.
And for anyone listening, have a great day.